Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast with your host, Dr. Monica Burns.
Welcome to the Easy EdTech Podcast. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you know that with almost 40 episodes currently live, up to this point, it's been just me. Just me sharing tips, strategies, and favorites to make EdTech easier in your classroom and school. These episodes are under 20 minutes, have one clear focus, and are pretty evergreen, meaning you can listen to them any time of year and apply the strategies to different types of tech-friendly environments as you place tasks before apps. Well, I'm excited to try something new with you today in this bonus episode. Tom Murray, author of the new book, Personal and Authentic: Designing Learning Experiences That Impact a Lifetime, reached out to me right before his new book hit shelves a few weeks ago. I've known Tom for several years. He's a fellow ASCD author, and I've had the chance to see Tom keynote and present at a number of EdTech events. In today's bonus episode, Tom was kind enough to share some stories from his book and, of course, actionable information that you can put into practice right away. The Easy EdTech Podcast is all about making EdTech integration easier, and Tom and I will talk about some ways to leverage EdTech to make sure learning experiences are personal and authentic this school year too. Before we dive into today's episode, a quick announcement. You know that I love bonus items and extra special things, and I have one for you. If you purchase a copy of Tom's book, Personal and Authentic, I've created a list of 10 EdTech tools to create authentic learning experiences for students for you. All you have to do is head over to the show notes for this episode by going to classtechtips.com/Tom's book. All one word, classtechtips.com/Tom's book. If you buy the book and fill out the Google form to let me know you got a copy before December 8th, I will send you the PDF so you can download 10 EdTech tools to create authentic learning experiences for students. So go to classtechtips.com/Tom's book, where you'll see the page for this bonus episode and a Google form to get the bonus item. As long as you have ordered the book, have a copy sitting on your desk, or are ready to order it before December 8th, you'll be all set. So head over to classtechtips.com/Tom's book or classtechtips.com/podcast to get all the information on the book and bonus item. Now, let's dive in to the interview. Thank you for joining me today for this bonus episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. For those folks listening who are new to your work, can you share a bit about your role in education and in this EdTech space?
Sure, I'd be honored to. And hello, everybody. It is awesome to be with you. So I'm Tom Murray. I'm currently the Director of Innovation for Future Ready Schools. We are a bipartisan nonprofit group out of Washington, D.C. So I share that because I get to work with thousands of educators. Many times it's teachers, many times it's superintendents, principals, instructional coaches, tech leaders. And so my role varies all across the board, but a lot of it is focused on the effective use of ed tech. And so one of the areas, it's been a passion, you know, Monica, we've been friends for so many years, and I respect your work tremendously and the work that you do it. And, you know, when I think about your book around this, you know, tasks before apps, it's really in the work in the space we do really has that same premise. We are spending so much money on ed tech. How do we make sure that the dollars we're spending are used well so that it has an impact on learning? And I know that we would both agree that just because something is digital doesn't mean it's any good. My work with educators is to help them say, we've got these amazing tools. You know, Education Superhighway came out with another report saying up to 99% of schools now have the connectivity that they need for kids. And so it's helping them on one hand out of DC on a high level policy end and advocating around things where are traditionally marginalized groups of students that have limited access for things like the homework gap at home and connectivity at the high level, or working with teachers, just like I was doing the other day in Ohio, saying when we're using ed tech in the space, in our classrooms, what does the effective use actually look like? And how can we leverage tools and apps for things like formative assessment and those levels? And so one of the things that I love about my being able to do the work that I do is I'm never bored, because sometimes it's the highest levels in DC from a policy end, and sometimes it's really where the rubber hits the road. And my favorite place is working side by side with teachers and admin on how do we support the great work that they are doing every day. And fortunately, EdTech's been a passion of mine. It's an area that I can work in very consistently with them.
That's wonderful. And I love how you said, you know, you get to work with a bunch of different groups, right? So really seeing that policy component, but then that time with teachers in classrooms. I know I feel the same way, right? That's really such a special part, right, of all of this work that we do. And I'm actually at the ASCD CEL conference this week, and we're both ASCD authors. And I love your book, Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today. It's on my bookshelf and was excited to feature it on the blog when it came out, but your new book is very different. And I was excited to jump in, right? Absolutely loved the stories and the actionable items within each chapter. But I'd love for you to tell us about what made you decide it was time to share your new book, Personal and Authentic, Designing Learning Experiences That Impact a Lifetime. What made you ready to share this with the world?
Thank you so much for the shout out. And, you know, going back to Learning Transformed, Eric Scheninger and I co-authored that really with a particular purpose of how do we get on the desks of the decision makers that are leading the work in schools, that whether it's your superintendents, your curriculum directors, that have such an impact. And if they're not on board and helping to shift the system, it can be really difficult to support teachers in a way that they need to. And so Learning Transformed was very research heavy, very research to practice. Michael Fullan called it a blueprint for systems change when it comes to schools. And you're right, Personal and Authentic, my new book, is completely different. It's actually much more like I speak, much more like if I'm doing a keynote for an event or presenting with teachers. This is much more really geared towards the classroom focus. And so as you shared, this one is much more narrative and story. I'll be really vulnerable throughout the podcast just because in my book, I really was. I just lay it out there. I talk a lot about my own failures. I talk a lot about struggles that I had. I talk a lot about reflecting on days driving home, wondering if I had the courage that it takes to be a teacher every day. And I think part of that is, you know, that sense of needing to lead with humility in that work, because people can relate to that. And so when I take a look at this book, it was really, I felt like it was time to share my story. You know, I didn't do a whole lot of that from a narrative in Learning Transformed, because it was much more that research to practice and really what it looks like on a systems end, where this one is much more reflection on some of my days teaching and some of the struggles that I had and being just really vulnerable with that. And you're right, I share some very, very personal stories in there that I'll be real and said, as I wrote them, some of them I wrote for the very first time. Some things I've shared in certain events or places like that that are hard for me to share without having tears in my eyes. And I will tell you, some of these pieces, and I've never had this before in a book, as I wrote, I reflected and I had some tears. And part of that is just the understanding of the work we do as educators is so real. It can be so raw at times. It is so challenging and so difficult. And I never want to forget where I came from, even in the national work that we do. And I never want to forget what it's like to teach, say, fourth grade on a given day and how difficult and challenging it is. And so I wrote it to inspire and encourage, yet at the same time, challenge and push us out of our comfort zones. So when people put down that book for the last time, I want them taking a breath saying, I can do this. And also having an understanding of the impact that they have. And one of the themes throughout is that they get to leave their fingerprints on the lives of generations to come. And to me, that is not a utopianist thought. That is an absolute real tried and true. Because when I look back to my own schooling experience, when I was a student growing up or a child growing up, and I look back at the impact, here we are decades and decades later, and it's still the fingerprints that were of teachers of mine or principal leaders of mine that I can still feel on my life generations later. And so it really, I felt like it was time to continue to encourage and inspire, but also to really look at it. I'd share the one last piece that really makes it different. And there's a lot of pieces that I wrote through the eyes of being a dad. And so when I look at some of the medical needs of my own children, and I look at what are the hopes I have for my own kids, it goes far beyond content and curriculum. It's about seeing them as a person. And so I'm open to sharing some of the thoughts and like I do throughout the book of some of the challenges my own children have and being vulnerable in that, so that their teachers see them as more than data points and test scores, but see them as the children that they are first and foremost. And so, you know, writing that and pulling that together was really to hope, give a teacher's hope. I very rarely will ever go to a building and everybody's saying, nope, this, we're good and we don't need anything. And we're totally rested out. Nobody's stressed out. Instead, I would say, like, I never hear that. It's always people that are just running and going and going and going. And so taking a look at things like self-care and making sure that we are taking care of ourselves in this process are so vital, because our teachers need and deserve that. But of course, most importantly, our students need and deserve that as well.
And so, you know, all of these pieces, the stories that you share, that vulnerability component of really being honest, right? And talking about struggles in the past and reflecting on what it, you know, what previous experiences have had in terms of an impact on, you know, the work that you do now. I mean, have you seen in other spaces that you go to, the schools that you visit, the school leaders that you speak to, do you see a lot of that vulnerability while you're out in the field? Or do you think that there's hesitation from other folks to share that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, you know, so I'll look at this in two ways. One, to address your question head on from an educator end, I think there is often hesitation, but to me, it's a direct sign of culture. In a culture in a building where people feel like they belong, where there's trust, because trust is really the foundation of those relationships, and relationships is that foundation of culture, people will be more vulnerable. But in a toxic environment, or an environment where, say, a principal rules by fear, vulnerability is seen as a weakness, is seen as you don't know what you're doing. And then thus, you know, our brains are wired for that safety, and it doesn't come natural to do it. And so to answer that part of your question, there is hesitation all over the place. And so going back to my personal side, one of the things I committed to a number of years ago, and I know you've been at a bunch of events where I speak, I will never stand in front of an audience. One of the commitments that I make, and I'll share this publicly, I will never stand in front of an audience and tell people how well I did something. I'll never stand up there, pat myself on the back and say, well, like, look at me and look how perfect my school was when I was a principal. And when I was in a classroom, mm-hmm. look how perfect my classroom seating was. Like, I will never stand in front of people and do that ever. Because on one hand, the arrogance is a huge turnoff for me. And if I'm listening to a speaker or I'm writing a book and that person like comes across as they've got it perfected, like, I'm out. I want nothing to do with the person, because the entire time I'm thinking, like, come on, like, you're not being real. Like, you're telling me you've perfected all this. And one of the things is, you know, putting myself back to that early teacher who is struggling. And like, you know, I remember I'd have colleagues talking about, well, next month when we get to, and I'm thinking, like, next month, I'm just trying to make it till today, you know? And so, never forgetting what that feels like to just keep my head above water. And so to stand on a stage in front of, you know, on Tuesday, I was in front of about 2,000 educators. And if I stand up there and basically just read them the Riot Act and what they need to do, I lose people, understandably so, in a minute. And from a humility end, I will never do that. And so when I look at what in the way of writing personal and authentic, what I have found is people relate to vulnerability. Now, I will tell you, I really put myself out there in stories that I tell, in areas where my mindset was off, where I will share where, like, I was looking at things wrong and it took a mentor like whacking me upside the head and saying, maybe it's you that's the problem and not the kids. And, you know, it's moments like that that I really believe people can relate to. And I think when we're vulnerable in our work and we have that mindset, you know, even today, this morning, somebody asked me, like, how do you know so much about X? And I kind of laughed and said, look, like, I, you know, it's an area that I've been working, but like, I still have a lot to learn. And I think the moment we think we've arrived in these areas is the moment of our first step back. Because what would we expect for kids in the classroom? We expect them to have that growth mindset, to own what they do, to own their mistakes, to keep moving forward. So how do we model that? Because when I look at it in the classroom, if kids look at us as teachers, as they know everything about their curriculum area, they know everything about every aspect that they're teaching, and they never see that teacher make mistakes, like, as lovingly as I can, they can't relate to you because they don't know what that's like. And so whether I'm speaking in front of an audience or working side by side with teachers, I've learned to just be very vulnerable in the work, and people can relate to failures. And it also shows that lesson through failure. So it's not just listening like, hey, here's Tom's top 10 ways he's messed up life. It's very much about the way that my mindset was off, or the way that something really hit me. I can share some of those examples if you want, but I think that vulnerability people can relate to. And to me, it's just so important. And so throughout personal and authentic. There's many stories of whether it was when I was a teacher and I wasn't modeling what I was asking for my kids, when I was a principal and I would lead a faculty meeting in the exact opposite way I would ask my teachers to teach. It was just putting it out there. And part of it is really to help people reflect. And I think, you know, throughout the book, I created these points where it's literally called stop and reflect. And so in the middle of a section or a chapter, you'll see stop and reflect. And it's really questions to help them reflect. And it's often after times where I share how I messed something up or my mindset was off. And then I challenge them with a similar question on, you know, has there ever been a time where once you learned the story about a child, your mindset changed based on then what you thought because you understood the why and those kinds of examples. And so to me, that vulnerability really is everything.
Yeah. And, you know, vulnerability can be such a scary word, right? Sometimes we all associate it with that, right, idea of giving some of ourselves or putting ourselves out there. But I really like how you brought it back to that word relatable, which doesn't feel as scary, right? Because when we are vulnerable, when we are sharing, when we are able to reflect and talk about those experiences, right, that relatability, I think, can impact some change, right? It gets people thinking about how something connects to their own experience, right? It brings it to a level that everyone can connect. Yeah.
And I think, Monica, I think an example, you know, a lot of times I do get the privilege of working with principals, and I really love pushing their thoughts on this as well. Because, you know, when I was a middle school principal and I was an elementary principal, part of my mindset was like, wow, you know, like, hey, everybody's watching. My teachers are looking for me for direction. They're looking at me the answers. And it's so easy to feel like, okay, I've got to have this all together. I've got to look at it like I know those things because they're relying on me. And of course, we've got to be competent. I'm not talking about not being competent in that regard. But at the same time, the vulnerability of standing in front of a staff and saying, you know, gang, last month I made that decision and it did not go the way that I thought it was going to go. And I'm going to own that. And I apologize because I know that created some chaos. So we're going to regroup and I'm going to get your thoughts on how we can do this better. Teachers see the value in that because they know what that feels like in the classroom. They know what it's like to have a well-planned lesson. The principal's in the back of the room. We're serving kids, so it goes haywire for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. And then when they regroup, the value to be for a principal to be able to say, you know what, last month when I did that, you know, in our faculty meeting, I was talking about it. I know that feeling, and it's okay. It's going to happen. Because really, I think our legacy is often built in the moments where we don't know what to do. It's not just in those moments where it's like we're riding the wave and things are fun and things are going well. It's what happens when we don't know what to do. What happens when the principal's and my teacher and the principal's walking in and they're sitting there for the observation, and you know, every teacher in the world wants to do an amazing job during those observations because they want to show the great things that are happening in their classrooms. And there you are, and it's all right, take out the Chromebooks or take out the iPads and let's get signed in and let's get rolling. And the Wi-Fi goes down. Like, how do we handle that moment? And so part of what I talk about in the book is this idea around failing forward. It's not if, it's when. And those moments of uncertainty create opportunities for our leadership legacy. You know, those moments where we fail or those moments where things don't go our way, it's an opportunity to get up and to keep trying to model to those, for those that look to us for direction, perseverance. And so when our kids in our classroom see us, when something doesn't go our way, or the Wi-Fi goes down, or we're trying to get something to work on a projector and it doesn't, or, you know, something we're trying to use isn't working, in that moment, how we respond in front of kids teaches them in life, when things don't go our way, how do we fail forward? How do we pick ourselves up? And how do we keep running? And to me, that is such a valuable life skill.
It's so valuable. And sometimes I think that, you know, that becomes the memory, right? Or the most memorable part of an experience. I know there's plenty of times where I've presented to a group and maybe the Wi-Fi wasn't very strong, right, at the site, right? Or a projector light bulb was being funky. And I think to myself sometimes, you know, maybe it's the way that I handled that, in the sense of, it's okay, we're going to look at this, or pull this up on your device. Or, right, I wonder sometimes if those more teachable moments are the ones that people remember as opposed to some of the content, right? Or the reasons I came someplace, right? Those management strategies, those pieces, because you're right. Those are the things we remember when we get into a moment, right, of struggle, when we see someone else who's been successful, right, tackling a situation that's a little bit challenging. And, you know, one thing you mentioned, Tom, was about you know, some of the items within the book, the reflection questions. And I really love how you have, you know, a try this and make it stick, you know, sections throughout the book, right? Ranging from committing to sharing diverse stories or overcoming adversity and reminders on the importance of taking one-on-one times for quick catch-ups with students. And I'm curious if there's a particular, you know, small moment or special story that really inspired you to make sure that, you know, some of these tips would be peppered throughout
sure.
the book.
So, you know, as an author, it's how do you consider your audience? You know, and for me, I'm looking at how do I make this a book that encourages and inspires, but also it's something that they can do in their classroom that afternoon, or they can read and say, you know what, I can try that tomorrow. And so knowing that there's going to be a kindergarten teacher reading my book, a high school physics teacher reading the book, and a superintendent, it's trying to, how do you meet the needs of all of those and not just have a one size fits all approach? And so the make it stick, I came up with because I recognize that I have one lens. It's a white male lens that has a lot of privilege in a lot of ways, that there's so many people out there doing amazing work that have just very different viewpoints. And so there's about 50 make it sticks throughout the book. And so the way that I did that, number one, is I wanted to find a lot of diverse voices, people that have different lenses than I do, different backgrounds than I do, have taught different grades than I do. I wanted kindergarten teachers. I wanted high school teachers. I wanted middle school principals. I wanted practitioners and saying, what does this look like for you? And so what I would do is I worked with about 50 different people that are practitioners in school in some way. And I sent them a section and said, you know, when I'm thinking about this section right here, you're somebody that comes to mind, in my opinion. What's a 2 or 3 sentence thing that somebody could try tomorrow to make what we're talking about here in an area that I think you shine actually happen? And so they created this 2 or 3 sentence, you know, just kind of make it stick, a way to actually do it. Because I know that practitioners and all they have on their plates, they want those practical ideas to try something. So it's not just this idea of we're doing it wrong or we're doing it right, let's celebrate. It's very much, well, what can I do? It really comes from this preference of so what, now what? So if this area around, I'll pick one of these areas, say this idea of social emotional learning is one of the areas that I talk about in the personal and authentic framework. Well, we get it and we can talk about it. And we all know the whole child is important, but what do I actually do to make it work in the classroom? And so it's meant to be really practical. The try this is really a section where I racked my brain and said, okay, if I'm a principal working side by side with a teacher, and that teacher were to say to me, whether when I was a secondary principal or an elementary principal, well, how do I do that? What are the things that I would say? Well, try this. And so some of them are directed towards principals. Some of them are directed towards teachers, but it's really meant to be practical in nature. Because to me, when I work with just thousands of people in a given year, understandably so, they want those practical takeaways. And so those sections are fully designed just for that.
And I love how, you know, they are ones that, you know, as you mentioned, you can really tailor to different groups. You might see something that sticks out for you for a current role, or you might grab an idea that you share with someone else, right, who you work with throughout the school day that you know might resonate with the group of students they work with. So having that nice wide range, I think, is really just a wonderful way to encompass, right, all the different things and that people might come into a book with in terms of, you know, their background and experience. And, you know, I have to say, Tom, that, you know, when I read the book, I think, you know, it's fantastic. And that's why I brought you on today for this, you know, first guest or a bonus episode of the Easy Ed Tech podcast, because, you know, I think it's really hard to find resources that are both inspiring with the big ideas, right, with the narrative stories that you share, you know, and actionable, right, that you can put into practice right away. And I know when I lead professional development for teachers, or instructional coaches, I often frame goal setting when we kind of wrap up at the end of our day or end of our session into the this week, this month, you know, this year type of language, going from a shorter to, you know, a longer term. And if you are talking with a teacher, a coach, a school administrator, I know you work with a large audience, right, about making learning really authentic and personal, what is something they could do within that month time frame that they could tackle within a few weeks in that chunk of the school
year?
Sure,
that's a great question. And again, talking about making it actionable, and I'll tie the two together. You know, one of the things going back to the try this and the make it stick is I really also wanted to look at it from an end of, it's not a try this, go spend $1,000 and bring it into your classroom to do this, because people would laugh at that, right? And we know that's not feasible. So part of what I would say here that we can do is I'll give it, make it twofold. One is the importance of reflection and focusing on the why. So let me give you a quick example. One of the stories I tell in the book around ed tech, this is where it hits me. And Monica, I think you may have heard me tell this story at a keynote that I did. So 18 years ago in my classroom, I was teaching fourth grade, and 18 years ago, I was 1-to-1. Palm Pilots. And so there I was. And the quick story goes like this, because this is where, from an ed tech end and a reflection end, this is where it really hit me. And this is where my mindset changed. So there I was, my principal was coming in, he wanted to do an observation. It was the following week. And, you know, I get the observation email, and I'm all jazzed up. And here I am, I'm one of the few test classrooms in our district. And we're 1-to-1 Palm Pilots, baby, and we're going to be using all this technology. And so there it was. And he wanted to see a spelling lesson for whatever reason. And so there we were. And, you know, for the entire time, all 30 minutes, technology was used the entire time. Essentially, kids, they were beaming their independent spelling list back and forth, and one would write it, they'd beam it to the other, they would check it, and they went back and forth and back and forth. And so as they did that, my principal observed and watched, and I will tell you, my lesson plan was followed like to the minute. I used technology the entire time. Every kid was engaged the entire time. And as a 22-year-old, I remember feeling like I should drop the mic, because that principal, that's how you teach, that's how you observe a lesson right there. I hope you caught all that, because that was some brilliance. You know, I dropped the mic, sent them out to recess. So the next day I go down to my principal, and I will tell you, just the full disclosure piece, he was an amazing principal that set the culture of vulnerability. He was one that would be vulnerable in front of us. He created a culture of innovation, a culture of risk taking, but he would also push us. You see, in those cultures, it's not that anything goes and it's just about everybody's feelings. You can do that and be hyper-focused on high-quality instruction and no-nonsense kind of thing. And so, you know, he pulls me down the next day, and I remember like walking down being like, I can't wait to hear how great the principal thought I was the entire, you know, that lesson yesterday. And I still joke about it years later, but it's true. And so I walked down, and like we've all heard, you know, I sat down, the principal looked at me and he said, so Tom, how do you think the lesson went? You know, I smiled and I said, Bill, yeah. I've got to be honest. Like the kids were engaged the entire time. I used technology the entire time. I mean, they were using their Palm Pilots the whole time. And so he kind of smiled and he nodded his head. And he said, so Tom, you know, what were your learning objectives? And I said, well, we wanted to use the Palm Pilots to be able to, and he cut me off. And I'm like, he said, no, Tom, what were your learning objectives? And I said, we wanted to use the Palm Pilots to be able to. And he said, Tom, stop. Every time I ask you about learning, you start talking about the technology. And he really pushed on it. And again, he didn't rip my heart out. He was pushing me because he knew instructionally this is where I needed to go. And he said, I really think you planned that lesson because you know, the technology could do something, not because it was the best way to learn something. He said, Tom, let me give you an example. If you took the Palm Pilots out of the equation, could they have sat side by side, pencil and paper, and done the exact same amount of the things that they did in 6 or 7 minutes without the technology? And I remember my head kind of turning, being like, huh, he's spot on. So here's where I go back to your question. And I tell that story. Yes, that's vulnerability, because that's a time where my mindset was off. I was so hyper-focused on creating something because of the shiny devices that we had that I lost focus of, is that the best of use of the minutes that we had? And not that that practice or that repetition is bad, but could I have been more efficient in the time if I wasn't using the tech? And the answer is absolutely yes. And so going back to the question of, if I'm a teacher, what's something I can do in the next month? To me, the importance of reflection on our why and our purpose in all that we do, it is so easy, especially if we're somebody on social media. Things get glorified on social media left and right that are honestly, at the end of the day, real low-level practices. So it's evaluating some of the things that we do and just being critical of ourselves. I don't mean critical in a bad way, but just being critical of the, is this the best way to really do that? Or am I glorifying the digital simply because it's digital? The flip side, so that we'll take that reflection on the why and those pieces, but then I would start to really process, going back to that authentic and personal piece, and really look at how are we meeting the stories inside of each child. And so one of the pieces, here we are, you know, we are in November and we've gotten to know our kids, but do we really know the stories inside of our kids? And so one more idea that I'll give over the next month is, one of the areas that I had written about, it's really around the hidden stories within. And so when we take something like ed tech, we can leverage great tools to get to know kids' stories in ways that can be confidential with us. And whether it's a feedback form as kids walk into the classroom and how are you feeling today? What's one thing on your mind today? And every child gets to share. We can leverage tools for the social emotional side to create those connections that then you can lead to, hey, I just got to hear from 30 of my kids in my second grade class that I can now quickly look at where their hearts are at today. I think those are some really practical, tangible ways that we can make that actually work, but refocusing on the reflection and the why. And so just a couple ideas or thoughts that I think could be in the next month that we could refocus on.
I love both of those pieces because they're so doable and really customizable, right? You might have reflection that takes place on your own, right? In a journaling kind of format where you're just looking back at the month and saying, here's what I want to do in a month forward. You might have a mentor or mentee, right, to have a conversation with about what you'd like to accomplish over that time frame, right? Reflecting on those experiences. But then, of course, right, you could leverage digital experiences to get kids talking, right, and reflecting too, and kind of a short-term connection to your goals for them to think about, right, what they've experienced so far this school year. So let's continue with this ed tech, you know, spin true to the idea of the Easy Ed Tech podcast. And I'd love, Tom, if we could zoom into some ways to leverage technology when designing personal and authentic learning experiences. You talk in your book about moments of awe. I love that phrase, including the use of virtual reality and makerspaces too. So what is exactly, like when you say that term moment of awe, what are you getting at there? And then how might technology come into play there in a really meaningful way?
Yeah. So, and I'm a huge fan of EdTech to put that out there. I think it's focusing on the right uses of it. And on one hand, I'm always hesitant when I say that because there's certainly times and places where technology can make things more efficient, and that has a lot of value. But it's understanding the premise of just because something is digital doesn't mean it's better or good. And I just shared my own story with that as one example where that really hit me. But when I think about moments of awe, I think about what are those moments that when kids come home, they can't stop talking about. My daughter just 2 days ago just had one in science class. They got to dissect a sheep brain. And I will tell you, to this day, she can't stop talking about it. You know, it's those light bulb moments. And it's that kindergartner that reads the sentence independently for the first time right around this point in the year. And they look up at the teacher like, I just did it. I just did it. Or, you know, it's the fourth grader in the back of the classroom with electricity and magnetism, and they're doing some sort of like PBL or inquiry kind of base unit and trying to get the light bulbs to go on, and he's getting frustrated, and then he figures it out, and that moment where he's jumping up and down saying, I did it, like that moment. And so technology really gives us the opportunity when we look at best practice really from a research end around explore, design, create. So let me give you just one example. You know, I was in Ohio recently working with a district, and one of the neatest uses of EdTech I've ever seen, they were connecting with a classroom that was in Africa. You see, they were studying, and I believe it was fourth grade, they were studying water and water tables and clean water and drinking water, but also looking at things like culture and empathy and so many of those pieces. And so somehow got connected to a classroom in Africa that had, they had digital connections. So they had the ability to connect through technology. Because you would think, you know, things like space and time, which has completely limited us without technology, those barriers can be broken. So here's kids in the United States leveraging things like Flipgrid to connect with children on another continent in time zones, like 10 hour difference or something like that. So they can't do it in real time because when, you know, they're at night, we're going to school and vice versa. But then when kids are coming to school the next day, here's a class that's learning English that is in a area that does not always have clean drinking water. Talk about technology opening up the doors to the world. Those kids are so excited about the opportunity to connect with these other kids because it's real to them. And so technology can help bring things to life by providing that tool or that conduit in what wouldn't be possible. A child cannot have that experience in a textbook. And so when you take a look at, yeah, you could read about clean drinking water. Yes, you can read about kids that don't have it. And there's importance to that. I'm not knocking literacy at all. I mean, that's certainly important, but it doesn't remotely compare to hearing from your new friend when they talk about having to go miles for clean drinking water through the use of something like technology, that is a very, very different world. And sometimes, so when we take a look at this idea of making things personal and authentic, it's how do we allow, empower, not even allow, how do we empower kids to leverage technology to explore, to design, to create, and not just regurgitate. And so there's certainly places for consumption. There's certainly places for critical consumption. But when we look at it on the whole, technology is such an amazing tool to put those tasks before the apps, as you would say, to then create those moments of awe that kids will look back on that they will never forget. And whether it's science, it's digital music, there's so many areas, digital art, it can be, to create those moments that when kids get home, they can't stop talking about. And so those moments of awe, when I think about my own experiences, those light bulb moments, and sometimes to us as adults, they may not be big, but that those moments that right. those kids go home and they are so excited about. You know, my daughter, it's funny being an author. My kids now, of course, say they want to publish their own books, which I inspires me as dad. And so my daughter was part of this writing club, and part of a moment of awe was being able to work on a book to be able to self-publish it. And as we submit it, hitting that button saying, I'm publishing my own book. And the look in her eyes of like, I did it, is priceless. And so it's those moments. And I would also say, though, I'm realistic, and going back to the idea of the last thing I would want to come across in saying that is a teacher thinking that like every moment of every day has to be this awe-inspiring experience. And that's not realistic. And of course, that's not the case. But the flip side is, what if kids go weeks without having it? Then that's a problem. Hmm. And so what do those moments look like? And every day in classrooms, these moments occur. And I think as teachers, we need to celebrate them and not look at it as just like, oh, that was neat. But look at it like that's one of the ways that our fingerprints get to be left of impact on truly generations to come.
I love that. And what a powerful story, and what a wonderful way to frame that idea of moment of awe, because that, you know, we all know what that feels like as a student, as a teacher, as a person, right? To run home and want to share something, the special that happened to us over the day, something that we're not going to forget when we figure out that thing we've been trying to figure out. And that Flipgrid example, my goodness, right? So if you can give kids an audience, if you can connect them with students in different places, just really, really powerful technology connection. So thank you for that story. And, you know, now Tom, you're active on social media, right? And you can follow Tom at @ThomasCMurrayEDU on Instagram. Definitely recommend that to folks who are listening, and at @ThomasCMurray on Twitter. And when I think about social media, you know, being personal and authentic is important, but can definitely be scary at times too. So just to kind of finish us up together today, I'd love to hear a little bit from you about what does it look like to be personal and authentic in social spaces when you are an educator?
So to me, it's just about being real. It's about being vulnerable, but it's also about being cognizant of who your audience is. If you're going to be sharing out on Twitter something that's public and something that many, many people will see, is it something that you're okay with complete strangers seeing? And so it's this balance of being vulnerable and putting yourself out there, because nobody wants to follow the person that comes across as arrogant, that comes across as I've got the perfect classroom, that comes across as my classroom design is perfect and you're not doing it and why aren't you doing it? Nobody wants to follow the person that it's just, hey, just buy my book. And so, you know, when it comes for me as an author, as somebody that speaks that's out there, I want to be real. I want to be vulnerable. I also would say around being personal and authentic, a way to model that is how do you connect with voices that are different than your own, ideas that are different than your own? So for me, it's also about connecting with a diverse audience of people that have different views and different lenses and different life experiences with me. Because if I'm going to talk about being personal and authentic, the world has to be a lot bigger than my own eyes, my own lens. And so I would encourage you to get connected with those people that are telling different stories, that have different viewpoints, that have different lenses, to push your own thinking. Because part of being personal and authentic is recognizing that we still all have room to grow. We still have ways that we can connect with others in better ways. And social media is a great tool to do that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And you're absolutely right. You know, we have a wonderful opportunity to connect with people who have similar experiences, who have different experiences, to open our eyes, as well as to share right in that space too. So Tom, your new book, Personal and Authentic, so fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your new book with my listeners.
It's quite an honor to be here, my friend, and you keep leading the way as well.
Tom's book is now available on Amazon, and for a limited time, I'm offering a special bonus item for anyone who purchases his new book. You know that I love bonus items and extra special things, and I have one for you. If you purchase a copy of Tom's book, Personal and Authentic, I've created 10 EdTech tools to create authentic learning experiences for students for you. All you have to do is head over to the show notes for this episode by going to classtechtips.com/Tom's book. If you buy the book and fill out the Google form to let me know you got a copy before December 8th, I will send you 10 EdTech tools to create authentic learning experiences for students. So go to classtechtips.com/Tom's book, where you'll see the page for this bonus episode and a Google form to get the bonus item. So head to classtechtips.com/Tom's book or classtechtips.com/podcast to get all the information on the book and bonus item, 10 EdTech tools to create authentic learning experiences for students. Make sure to take advantage of this ASAP because I'm only offering it until December 8th. Thanks so much for tuning in to this bonus episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast for a new episode every Tuesday morning to go straight into your podcast queue. Have a wonderful rest of your week and can't wait to see you next time here on the Easy EdTech Podcast.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Easy EdTech Podcast wherever you're listening.